The Oregon legislature that adjourned last week is being acclaimed as the most productive in a generation. It produced significant education reform. It expanded the Oregon Bottle Bill and created the Oregon Health Insurance Exchange. And it adjourned on time. To discuss the legislative session, my guest is our state senator, Betsy Johnson. In the show's second segment, I'll talk with Sue Hildick, president of the Chalkboard Project, about the legislature's education reforms. Then we'll get Betsy Johnson's perspective on the education accomplishment and the challenge that remains there. Welcome to After Deadline, Senator Johnson.
Thank you very much. I'm pleased to be here.
Good. So you've got the perspective of seeing six regular sessions and numerous special sessions. How does this one compare?
Well, this one was very unusual. It was unusual for a variety of reasons. First of all, it was our new old governor. It was Kitzhaber 3.0, and that was new. That has never happened before in Oregon politics. And then the House was split 30-30. And so instead of having a Speaker of the House, we had co-speakers of the House. Co-speaker Arne Roblin from down in the South Coast and co-speaker Bruce Hanna from the Roseburg area. And I think to their credit, and it inures to all of our credit, they deported themselves really splendidly. I think the New York Times or one of the big national papers picked up the fact that their collegial relationship helped set a tone. Now, that exterior belies the fact that as a session grinds to a halt, there is always this kind of bone on bone as the final negotiations occur. But I think all in all, the legislature deported themselves well. There was a lack of public acrimony. Mostly we balanced a budget. When we came in, we had a $3.5 billion hole in the budget. We balanced our budget, which is our constitutional duty. We went home on time. We fulfilled our responsibility to do redistricting. And we passed major reforms in health care and education, albeit those work plans have to be ratified by the February 2012 special session. And just as I would say before your next question, as I watch some of our sister states, Minnesota, for example, basically shutting down, we departed on time. It was a productive session, and I think Oregonians should be pleased with what happened. Now, having said that, beside the education and the health care reforms, there were no major tax issues, and so it was a good session.
I've listened to you all the time. You've been in the legislature. I've heard you be, in prior years, very upset with how legislatures played out. So it has seemed to me that this, just by the Betsy Johnson Index, this was a much more reasonable gathering.
It was a much more reasonable gathering in terms of not having one party so dominant that they could take for granted the public input, that they could run the table, for lack of a better word. They had the votes to do everything they wanted. This session, by necessity, the fact that it was 30-30 on the House required there to be collaboration and working together and compromise. And I think the suite of bills that were passed are reflective of that compromise.
You've alluded to already, you had a governor who really came through for the state because in my estimation, you don't have to say yes or no on this, but we've had some governors who really didn't play their role as well as they could have with the legislature, and that's caused a lot of consternation.
Well, I think in this instance, that there was a bad rap on Governor Kitzhaber as he was running for his unprecedented third term, that he had left his second term declaring the state ungovernable. And the fact of the matter is that Governor Kitzhaber's agenda performed splendidly. Governor Kitzhaber got pretty much everything he wanted. And I believe in no small measure that was due to his hands-on participation. He was in our caucus, and just to remind the listening people that are hearing this, there are four caucuses in the legislature: the House Republicans, the House Democrats, the Senate Republicans, and the Senate Democrats. And it was unusual to have the chief executive officer, the governor, visiting all of the caucuses as regularly as he did. He went to visit with the Republicans. He went to visit with the Democrats on both the House and the Senate side. And I think his engaging, hands-on, cajoling, maneuvering, causing people to look beyond their own agendas, I think was very helpful to moving us forward, particularly in the two initiatives that he championed, and that was the overhaul of the education system, and we're going to talk about that more, and certainly laying the foundation for a redo on how we deliver health care services in this state, focusing first on the Medicaid population and then presumably expanding it to a larger arena.
If you've just joined us, I'm talking with State Senator Betsy Johnson. Well, Betsy, in cutting the budget as deeply as you had to, there's pain. And I know you hear about a lot of that. Give us an example of what you hear out there from your constituents.
First, I think it's important for people to realize that the three big areas of the budget are health, are education, human services, and public safety. And it's easy to remember that we educate, we medicate, and we incarcerate. That's my little shorthand. That takes up almost 95% of the budget. And so during periods of cuts, folks come to individual legislators and to the legislature collectively, and they say, why do you cut where Oregonians want it the least? And the answer is, that's where the money is. Those three areas comprise almost all of our budget. And then the rest for natural resources, economic development, everything else, innovation, research.
It's minor.
Is minor. So we heard a great deal. Ways and Means went on the road, which I think is very helpful. We went to a number of cities and had people come and testify before us. And certainly the reductions in services to vulnerable populations like developmentally disabled folks, we heard a lot about that. And I think that at the end of this session, the testimony that was presented at Ways and Means was very meaningful, and there were restorations in some of those areas, particularly for vulnerable Oregonians who, through no fault of their own, and I really mean that, through no fault of their own, come to rely on government services to just get by in the acts of daily living.
Now, the legislature did not address a couple of things that are fairly major, kicker reform and then the public employee retirement system. Why was that?
Well, it became tangled up in the end game politics. And when I refer to it as end game, each legislative session has sort of a life. And by the time we can feel it's coming to a close, and this time we had the arbitrary date of June the 30th to leave, you can feel people kind of digging into positions. And it became an issue over on the House side between the evenly split House Democrats and House Republicans, about the PERS reform or the kicker. The kicker, I will give all the credit in the world to Frank Morris, a very moderate Republican from Albany, who has, I think, courageously, because he's a little out of step with his party on this, has led the charge to say the kicker in Oregon, which is anomalous, is really anachronistic, and it does not provide us the nimbleness or the flexibility for the vicissitudes of the business cycle, and consequently we have these boom and bust cycles. That's not just the kicker. It's also the fact that we rely most heavily on the most volatile of sources to fund our basic revenue, and that's the corporate and personal income tax. And so Frank has led the charge to do reform in revenue for a really long time. And I think that it has to do with politics, sadly, that made it impossible for that to move forward. Both the Republicans and the Democrats are very focused on taking back the House. Again, the 30-30 split, a one-seat movement, creates a majority party. And I think that it takes more political courage than this legislature had to take on the kicker, or to take on, for the Democrats, any reform to the public employee retirement system because of the Democrats' concern about the public employee unions. Frankly, I would have supported either one of those, or both of them. I would have voted for the PERS reform, specifically the 6% pickup issue, and I would have voted for the suite of bills put forward by Frank Morris and his colleagues about kicker reform.
This was a big session for environmentalism in the sense of the bottle bill finally being expanded. It's been talked about for, I don't know, two or three sessions, and it finally happened. At the same time, environmentalists badly wanted the legislature to ban what's called bisphenol A, also known as BPA, which is used in baby bottles. Washington State has done that, has banned it, and so has Canada. Why won't Oregon legislators do that?
It passed, the BPA bill passed the Senate. Mm-hmm. I voted for it. It went over to the House, and there was very aggressive Republican opposition to it. I think the principal argument, and it's one that in some measure I buy, is that the marketplace is responding to the BPA question. One can go into pretty much any market now and buy specifically labeled BPA-free baby products, sippy cups and other utensils that children, infants eat out of.
Yeah.
And so I think the Republican argument was the marketplace is responding and the legislature should stay out of the free market as it responds to consumer desire to have BPA-free products.
You succeeded in redistricting, a rather major accomplishment.
Right.
Never happened before.
Well, and to put it in context again, the legislature, the Oregon legislature, based on the census, the national census that recalculates our national population every 10 years, we have to then redraw the lines to make sure that they are proportional, one man, one vote. And on the congressional side, it's very, very strict. It's 766,215 people. And they were able to do it to a 0.00 deviation, with one district having 216 and one of them having 214 out of the five. Otherwise, they're completely proportional. The legislature is a little bit more malleable. We have a little bit more play. There are ORSs that describe how we have to approach redistricting. We cannot favor a particular party or an incumbent candidate. I have to tell you, I voted against the state and for the congressional, and we can come back and talk about why later. The state program was not good for Senate District 16.
Okay. When we come back from a break, I'll be talking with Sue Hildick, president of the Chalkboard Project. The legislative session was big for education. To talk about that, we're joined by Sue Hildick, president of the Chalkboard Project, a nonprofit research group that has funded pilot projects in the schools to test theory about teacher incentives, teacher retention, and other things. Thanks for being with us, Sue.
Thanks, Steve. I'm delighted.
Good. So how does this Chalkboard Project rate this session of the Oregon Legislature?
We rate it very high. As you may know, it's been quiet on the reform front for the last 8 years, and in this session, a lot of education reform legislation was enacted, and we expect it to be signed by the governor. And so we feel like we are in a much more hopeful place about what can be done statewide to improve Oregon schools.
Well, let's walk through the product. One of the pieces that passed was it's called CLASS, but tell us, what is CLASS?
So CLASS is a pilot program that Chalkboard started about 4 years ago, and in fact, Tillamook School District has now been in CLASS for those 4 years. It's about building new career models for teachers, and it's about teachers designing their future. And what we do is some coaching around districts that really want to look at career ladders for teachers, better performance evaluations that include measures of student achievement, and alternatives to seniority-based pay. And Tillamook was one of the early districts who came into that program, and they have almost tripled their student achievement gain compared to the state average over the last 3 years. The results have just been stunning. And because of that, the federal government invested in CLASS this year, and we went to the legislature to ask the state to do the same, and they did. They came through and authorized a state program that looks very much like CLASS. It calls for collaborative reform in school districts that want to do it, and they dedicated $5 million to it. Which will be great because we have a waiting list of a dozen districts who would like to come into the program.
Now, Sue, am I right that another payoff of CLASS is teacher retention?
Exactly. And in fact, that was one of the biggest issues in Tillamook. They often felt like they were training and nurturing teachers who then moved into the valley after a couple of years. And their goal was, how do we keep folks in Tillamook? And so what they created was essentially an incentive program where teachers have a much more rigorous performance evaluation, and they are able to earn dollars if they're on the high end of that evaluation schedule that go into a bank account. And once they have stayed in the district for 5 years, they can access that pot of money. And in addition, they negotiated with their community for things like lower cost home loans, so that teachers really can have a full package that would entice them to stay in the district. And we know the first few years of teaching are pretty rough, and that the odds of a teacher staying in the career once they get past year five are much better if they've had good support early on in the process. And that's what CLASS tries to bring.
Good. What other measures passed?
Well, we're going to have some new governance models around education. The governor's vision for an Oregon Education Investment Board passed, and that will mean sort of linking early childhood, K-12, and higher ed together under one governance model. And while we don't know exactly what that means yet, I think what our hope is that it will better align those three systems, which is desperately needed, so that when we make investments in early childhood, which I think we all know pay off, we want to make sure those kids go into a strong K-12 system that continues to support them. And I think we still have a ways to go, but we're hoping that this governance model will really start to identify what the weaknesses are sort of system-wide.
Now, Chalkboard has undertaken other pilot projects, I believe, and certainly research projects. What else do you folks have in the pipeline?
Well, a couple of things. The legislature also passed a bill of ours that calls on the state to set statewide teaching standards and then has every district over the next 2 years revamping their performance evaluations to gear towards those standards, and it requires that every district uses measures of student growth. That's a very big step forward for the state of Oregon, and I think it will give parents a lot more transparency into what's happening in our schools. And it will also allow us to better support our professionals, which we need to do. We're also looking now, Steve, at teacher prep. We realize that the people who are going into the profession are really where we need to start, and we need to make sure that the education process they get to be teachers is a lot stronger. Mm-hmm. And so that's our next direction, is really we're going to run some pilot programs around different ways for teachers to be educated and to prepare to teach. And what it's going to mean is a longer student teaching experience. You know, right now that's an 8 to 10 week process, and we want it to be at least a year student teaching before a teacher goes into a classroom on their own. So we're going to try to test some of those things.
Now, this session was preceded by, I believe, at least two sessions that were fairly frustrating for Chalkboard. What made the difference in this session?
Well, I think there are three or four things. First of all, the national environment has changed so much. This president has put a real focus on education reform, and he has pushed the states to step forward. And that has created some safety in our state for Democrats to say, yes, we're willing to reform the system. And you know, the forces for the status quo in education are so strong that national change has helped here. I think the close margins in the House and Senate have also helped us, and it, you know, that requires a lot more moderate legislation to move forward, which I think was to our benefit. But most importantly, having an executive champion, having a governor standing for education reform is what we've been missing, and I think that's the biggest change.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, thank you so much for being with us today, Sue Hildick, president of the Chalkboard Project.
Thanks, Steve.
I'm back with State Senator Betsy Johnson. Well, Betsy, we just heard Sue Hildick of the Chalkboard Project, and one of the things that intrigues me about the Chalkboard Project, I think it's a fairly unique consortium of foundations within Oregon that got together some years ago to address the question of what's going on in our schools? Why does it seem like we can't fix things or change things? And I want to ask you about Chalkboard initially, because you have a family foundation too, so you're familiar with the foundation world and often how uncreative foundations can be. And what's your observation about the Chalkboard Project?
Well, I have several. This was a remarkable collaboration. It started out originally with the five biggest foundations in Oregon that included the Oregon Community Foundation, Ford Family Foundation, the Meyer Memorial, and it now has drawn many more supporters that are helping to lift the load. By way of criticism, I would say that I think they were a little naive in their early sessions. They underestimated the power of the Oregon Education Association. They believed, I think, that they could just come down, lay out what they believed to be the facts, and the legislature would immediately subscribe to it. They ran into a pretty heavy wall. They also were doing it by themselves, and it was a novel concept without any demonstrable results. Now, fast forward, and you heard Sue, who I admire greatly, talking about Tillamook. Tillamook is also in my Senate district, and so I have had the opportunity to observe how the CLASS project, which is championed by the Chalkboard Project, has played out in Tillamook. And the results are indisputable. The test results across all the disciplines, math, reading, all of them are through the roof. And so previously, when Chalkboard came into the legislature and said we have this new way of helping to prepare and retain and reward teachers, OEA and others could just dismiss them. Defenders of the status quo could say, no, we don't want to hear anything about this. The results in Tillamook and the other districts where CLASS is now are indisputable. And it clearly is raising teacher endurance, and I don't mean that in a pejorative sense, but teachers staying in the profession. They were burning out quickly. That hasn't been the experience in Tillamook, and the CLASS scores are phenomenal. So now you had Chalkboard coming back into the legislature with allies, including Stand for Children, strong allies, lobbying allies. And Chalkboard.
Who's Stand for Children?
Stand for Children was started by a guy named Jonah Edelman, who's Marion Wright Edelman was a former presidential advisor.
Yeah.
She and her husband were very big in politics and reform at the national level. And their son, a very bright lawyer, came out to Oregon, and he has started groups of Stand for Children that are specifically looking at how are children treated in our society by the legislature, by programs, by our education system. And Stand has fearlessly demanded reform. And so suddenly Chalkboard was not the only voice, the lone voice in the wilderness. Stand for Children, that has a very powerful grassroots lobbying initiative, was there with them. They had a governor also who was interested in breaking with the status quo. The governor came in with a very aggressive program. It was Senate Bill 909 that lays the groundwork for this much more efficient and accountable 0 through 20 education system. Now, at the very end, and lots of people have heard about this in a very negative way, there were politics. And over on the House side, Matt Wingard, who works for a virtual school company, was able to negotiate the fact that the House Republicans would trade the governor's Senate Bill 909 for this suite of other reforms that make crossing school district boundaries easier, that make it easier for virtual schools to function in the state. Very controversial. But the governor came to visit with our caucus, again, the Senate Democrats, and he said, I will sign any of these bills that make it because I think fundamental reform in the system is so important. And so originally when these bills were proposed to the legislature, both on the House side and the Senate side, the question was just get them to the floor. Then eventually that galvanized to get them to the floor and get them passed. And what I observed in the Senate was a kind of mixed bag. I voted for some of the suite. I voted against some of the suite. I was asked, for example, by President Galizio at Clatsop Community and President Green down at Tillamook Bay Community College to vote against one of the bills that caused there to be multiple authorizers for charter schools, specifically community colleges. And the community colleges thought that that would be enormously financially burdensome. And so I voted against that one. But some of the other bills were in this suite of education reforms, Senate Bill 242, that increases the autonomy for universities. They had badly wanted that. Senate Bill 552 that essentially redefines the role of the superintendent of public education, demanding more accountability and now placing those functions with the governor.
Yeah.
And there were ESD reforms, school districts providing all-day kindergarten, and then these bills that promoted professional development and standards for educators and administrators.
So we've got Governor, what are we calling him, 2.30. Will the next session of the Oregon legislature be education reforms 2.0?
The next session of the legislature will be, as mandated by the voters in November of 2010, it will be a regular constitutionally approved session in February, albeit only 35 days long. So we have to resist the temptation to make that February session the consolation prize session for everything that didn't happen in the regular session. Two of the big issues that we will take up in February are the details of the governor's transformational health care reform. That's House Bill 3650. And we will also, we the legislature, will also ask for many more details on Senate Bill 909 and the governor's early learning council. Because when they came to the legislature this February, they were largely in Governor Kitzhaber's mind. They hadn't been fleshed out into a business plan.
Is this the investment board?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. And listeners may or may not care, but your mother and my father served on the Oregon Board of Higher Education back in the Halcyon days when there was a lot of funding.
Well, I want to be clear. I just misspoke myself. The investment board is what you're talking about,
yeah,
that will collapse the Board of Higher Education and the State Board of Education,
yeah,
into the – that's Senate Bill 909. The governor also has an early learning council, and the governor's mm-hmm. early learning council stems from his observation that we have so many little pockets of agency work on the little kids. And we have siloed money and siloed work product. We need to break that down and be able to look at this early learning council. They will ultimately operate together. But again, with some of the vagaries and the absence of a fully developed business plan, the legislature was asking for more accountability, more transparency in what the governor was thinking, and that will come to us in February of 2012. But you're right. It's coincidental that both of our parents served on the State Board of Higher Education together.
Well, and yes, and in those days, that board, as I presume the State Education Board, were very well-defined entities. And as we've lost resources and with Measure 5, I guess those boards have become less clear in their mission. Am I right on that? Or
I think not so much less – well, yes, less clear in their mission. But also I think the governor – this governor's desire for something more streamlined and less siloed. The Board of Education that did the K-12 mm-hmm. didn't always talk to the Board of Higher Education. And once upon a time, there was a coordinating council, and that's what we've really recreated. Governor Goldschmidt got rid of the coordinating council. My mother was serving at that time at the pleasure of the governor on the coordinating council, and then Governor Goldschmidt eliminated it. But I think as far back as the Goldschmidt administration, there's been a desire to have a more seamless view mm-hmm. of how we educate our children all the way from zero, whether it's Head Start or pre-K or all-day kindergarten, all the way up through graduate. And how we transfer credits, for example, seamlessly from community colleges mm-hmm. to institutions of higher learning. That shouldn't be so difficult. And those are some of the problems that I think Dr. Kitzhaber is trying to get at.
Well, and even over I've noticed here, and I think it's changed for the better, but there was a time when it really wasn't made clear to Astoria High School students what they could do at the community college while they were being in high school.
Right. And now the community college role, whether it's Clatsop Community or Tillamook Bay or any of the others, has much more evolved into either causing students to earn terminal degrees or terminal certificates that allow them to go into the workplace, or clearly sending them on to our colleges and universities. Clatsop is lucky to have its relationship with PSU that I think has been strengthened under Dr. Vim Vivel. And so the opportunities are much greater, and I think that community colleges appropriately characterize themselves as economic development engines because they're getting people out of unemployment into the workforce or into paths for higher education more quickly than they have before.
Great. Well, thank you so much for being with us, Senator Betsy Johnson.
The time goes too quickly. There's a lot to talk about from this session, but I appreciate having
we'll do this again after the 30-day session. Is that right, in February?
I'd be happy to do that.
Good. Okay.